This episode of the Popcast is brought to you by these sponsors.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Popcast. Right here, this side. Alyssa Miller, she's a BISO. She's a business information security officer at S&P Global. She's my new bestie. We've been talking recently, kicking ass on Twitter together. Alyssa Miller, welcome to the Popcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Excited to be here.
I'm so excited. And again, it's like, you and I have a very similar vibe in terms of we want to help people in general, help people from this perspective, being kind to people, number one. And number two, I just like being helpful in terms of the knowledge that we have, right? And so I just love that about you. And so it's fantastic. I want to talk to you about this, your journey. First time you picked up a computer and you're like, I love this. And, you know, get into this information thing. Right.
Sure. This is a long story. So I'll try to keep it as condensed as I can. So I can go all the way back to when I was 4 years old, which is a lot of years ago. My father was an accountant. He worked for this little HVAC company and they were getting a new computer system. And they were going to convert at the beginning of the year because, you know, easy to convert the accounting system if you end 1 year and go into the next. And so, you know, a small company, you know, HVAC, you know, back in the 80s, they were closed over the holiday season. So he brought his computer home with him to work on setting up this new system. And early 80s here, we're talking, you know, big Zenith, a Heathkit, a gigantic thing. I joke with my dad now, like he was pioneering work from home way back then. Right. But, he let me play games on it when he wasn't busy trying to get everything ready to go for the first of the year. And so that was really the start. And then there was, there was a show again, child of the 80s. So on Nickelodeon, when I was a kid, you had they had episodes of Mr. Wizard. And he would have computers on there. And that always got me interested. And we had computers at school.
Did you grow up? You mind me talking about that? Where'd you grow up?
No, not at all. I mean, I've lived in the Milwaukee area my entire life.
Got it.
But yeah, I was fortunate enough that my parents.
Just like Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly where. home of beer and cheese. That's like what they know us for.
Can we sidebar? Let's talk about what's the cheese curds. Can you explain to me the fascination with cheese curds for the audience, not just for me?
I don't know how to explain it. They're just amazing, and you know that they're good when you bite them and they squeak in your mouth, right?
Incredible.
And then of course, then we like good Wisconsinites, we throw them in batter and then deep fry them as well. So then that's even more craziness. But I mean, fried cheese. You can't get much better than that. It's like little mini grilled cheese bites, it's awesome.
I make this good. Anybody that's in cloud native or security or DevOps or anything like this, the way to our hearts, everybody, cheese and food. That's the way. Yes. And beer and that's it. That's the way to all of our hearts. Would you agree with this, Alyssa?
Absolutely. Come on. I mean, without food, what does everybody do when they go to a conference? You go out to eat, you go to all the good restaurants, right? I mean, conference is great, good talks, who gives a rat's butt? Let's go find some place to eat and drink. And because I mean, the beer is always important too, but
no doubt. So continue. I'm sorry to go off on a little tangent. We're going to go off on a bunch of tangents. So live with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, wow. I was fortunate enough. I went to a private school where we had computers. Originally, we had like these TRS-80s that they bought without talking to anybody. So they had no disk drives in them. The only thing we could use them for was typing practice and basic programming. Because if you fire them up, they came up to basically a basic programming shell. And so I started learning how to do that. Then the school bought a bunch of Apples and I started staying after school because you could do basic programming on the Apple II GS that we had. And so then about 12 years old, I bought my first computer, right? And, I got a paper route. I saved up a bunch of money and I went out and I bought a computer. Like most kids, if they saved up $1,000 in those days, a computer was not the first thing they were running out to buy with it. But that's what I did. I got myself a modem. I got connected up with Prodigy and realized that, I didn't really want to pay for it. So I kind of, after my free trial ran out, might have found other ways in. But honestly, I didn't really, you know, and I continued doing programming and stuff, and I took some programming classes in high school even, still didn't see like programming or computers as a job. So when I started at Marquette University, I was a pre-med major, but three semesters of college level chemistry, and I'm like, peace out, yo. You know, like I'm not doing this. I don't want to be, you know, I'm listening to people talking about their weekend plans. They're like, where's the study group? I'm like, where's the damn party? You know, come on. What's going on here? This is not what I want to do.
Right.
So, you know, scrambling after three semesters to try to find a new major. And I'm looking through the course book and, oh, hey, they've got a computer science major. Well, hey, I know how to program. I could do that. And so that was where it all started. You know, it was the dot-com boom. So companies were hiring, you know, if you could program your way out of a paper bag, they wanted you. And so I had programming experience. I got my first full-time job while I was still in school at Marquette. And, you know, I got a programming job with a financial services company. I was a programmer then for 9 years before a manager from the security team came over and asked if I wanted to be a pen tester. So
let's talk about the development stuff before we get into the pen testing aspect. So like, were you just, what were you coding it? What specifically were you doing there?
Oh God, it was painful. No, as you said, it wasn't bad. A lot of what I did actually was honestly C++ to begin with, and then later turned into C#. What was painful was I started back on like VB 1.6 or 1.16 or something like that. I don't even remember what it was, but because we had, so I was working for a financial services company and we had these old, you remember VRUs?
Yeah.
And we still have them today, right? You dial up and you press numbers to get to where you want to go. Well, we did that for touch tone bill payment. So you think about what you do with electronic bill payment today. We were doing that with, you know, touch tone phones, but the Dialogic cards, I still remember that name. The Dialogic cards didn't support, I think at that point we were like on VB2 or something, or maybe even 3. But we had to use this old version of VB to program those cards. So I did work in VB, and VB stuck with me then because I got into ASP, ASP.NET, and always used VB instead of C# for that. But yeah, so I mean, I that was kind of my mix. I did, you know, some JavaScript, but we didn't have server-side JavaScript back then. So, I mean, you didn't have like Node.js and stuff. Thankfully, I somehow avoided Java through all this. Like, I was never a professional Java developer, which honestly is amazing to me because there is so much Java in that company. But yeah, I just happened to be in spaces where we weren't using that. Did a lot too in terms of database development, like writing T-SQL and Microsoft SQL, and then you know, PL/SQL in our Oracle database is huge. You know, this is all the group I was in was all the online banking or online banking and bill payment rather. And so the bill payment side, I mean, that was all Oracle. We're writing stored procs and these, you know, big monster Oracle databases, which of course also.
Some of our listeners are cringing right now. And some of our listeners are like, what? What?
Right.
What is Oracle, right?
What? Oracle stored procs? What are you talking about? Oracle is Java, right? How'd you do that and not do Java? You know, that's right. What I was wondering now. Like, So yeah, I mean, those were the days, but so that's where I got my start. And so I've always been kind of connected to like AppSec ever since, because that's really my jam. And so as things like DevOps and CICD have come alive and we're doing things now that like, God, I really wish we were doing that back when I was a dev,
sure. You
know, so.
Can we talk about just pen test? Let's talk about this generic topic of pen testing. What do you think, you know, I know what pen testing, but for folks that are uninitiated to what penetration testing is, please enlighten our listeners and watchers.
So interesting story, right? Because pen testing has a lot of different meaning depending on who you're talking to. And different people have different ideas of it, kind of like different people have different ideas of what DevOps is. But, you know, I mean, some people think of pen testing as more of like what I usually term like a red team approach, where I'm coming at a network and my goal is just to find a way in, right? Like my goal is just, I'm going to find the way in. And when I do, I'm going to document all the vulnerabilities and weaknesses I use to get there. other people look at pen tests as more of like a comprehensive security assessment where, you know, I'm going to, maybe my scope is a particular application. And so I'm going to try to find all of the security vulnerabilities that exist across that application. Or maybe it's a subset, or maybe it's the entire network space. And I want to find all the vulnerabilities. So just right off the bat, different people have different ideas of what a pen test would be. But ultimately, you're looking for vulnerabilities with the goal of highlighting, hey, these are the security flaws you have, so you can go fix them before the bad guys find them, right? I mean, that's how, when I talk to like my family or, you know, friends who have no idea, that's how I explain pen testing to them. Is it's, yeah, I break into things so I can find the flaws before the bad guys do. And I mean, that's it at its core.
Sivo is an alternative to the big hyperscale cloud providers. They've launched the world's first managed Kubernetes service powered exclusively by K3S. With sub-90-second cluster launch times, a simplified Kubernetes experience, and predictable billing, Sivo is on a mission to create a better developer experience. Get $250 free credit to get started. Sign up today at sivocloud.com/popcast. That's CIVO.com/popcast. Go check them out. What do you think the traits, and this is, I'm going off the, I'm just asking this in general, what do you think the traits of like a good pen tester, like what are the skill sets you need to be a good pen tester?
So I kind of harken back to when I was a kid, right? I tell this story a lot. When I was 4 years old, going back as that far, you know, when I was playing with computers, the other thing I did back then was I loved to take things apart. Because I like to see, one, how they worked, and I like to see, two, if I can make them work differently. And so I think that that's one of the big keys is just, you know, the people who are the best pen testers are those who really love to take things apart to figure out how they work and have that like natural curiosity. And then, of course, kind of the technical propensity to be able to really sort out how things work that maybe are technologies you've never seen before. You know, I think those are the best. Now, that's not the only people who can be effective pen testers, but I do think that that's a quality that makes for some of the best pen testers. I mean, you have that inherent kind of just desire to understand more of the why and the how, not just the what, when it comes to, you know, in this case, you know, usually more often than not, technology.
Right. Got it. And so how does a pen tester then get to this, like, you know, being this complete amazing, like, I want to know the progression from like the beginning seasons of pen testing to where you are now as a BISO. Like, let's talk about, you know, it's obviously the career path, but like the skill sets that you had to pick up in each of the stops that you made to get to the next level.
Sure. Well, mm-hmm. Obviously there is that technical side, right? Just understanding, you know, as a pen tester working in an organization, pen testing our own organization, what was really cool was, not only did I get exposed to like all the pen testing concepts, and I spent most of my time attacking the apps. I didn't do a lot on the network side. Again, former developer, AppSec, that was me. You know, so not only did I get that exposure, here's, you know, the OWASP top 10 and different types of vulnerabilities, but I got a lot of exposure to the countermeasures, all the things that we were doing because I was in the security team. You know, I'm working with other people in the security team. I'm working with our incident response team. I'm working with our operational team, which we didn't even call it a SOC back then. But, you know, talking to those folks and working with them on things, I got to see what the technologies were that we were using from firewalls, IPS, what we were doing from data loss prevention, all those, you know, even, again, we didn't call it identity and access management back then, but that's what we were doing. You know, all of those different technologies. So that's a big thing, just being kind of aware, you know, gaining all that knowledge. Then I got into consulting, right? So I spent 15 years at that financial services company. I had seen enough of financial services. I wanted to see the rest of the world. So I got into consulting and kind of promptly got thrown back into working with our financials customers. But hey, you know, so then, you know, a lot of that was pen testing, but it starts to elevate, right? So I was a managing consultant for what used to be Fishnet Security. Now they're part of Optiv. And, you know, so I started to learn more of the managerial side of it. And I had some of that at my previous role at FIS too. I mean, I was running our I was managing that security testing team by the time I left and running our vulnerability management program as well. So, I mean, you know, I had a lot of exposure to kind of that management level of that side of it. But now within Optiv, Fishnet, whatever you want to call them, I got more of that exposure. And then I went to Aspect Security. And in Aspect Security, I led their program services practice. So now my whole job was going out and meeting with like security leaders. So, you know, high ranking leaders, executives in the security space, no longer talking about, hey, how do you secure this app or how do you make sure that your SDLC is secure, but how do you build an entire application security program to make sure your, you know, 900, 1200, 1500 applications are all secure. So now I started to see more and more of kind of those conversations that happen at that business level. And then I guess the last piece I would throw in there is I progressed from there. I started working for a value-added reseller. And then from there to working for an actual vendor. So my last job before coming to where I'm at now was for Sneak. So I got to see more of the product side and to understand that that perspective of the world. What's it like to be in that product space, someone trying to sell these technologies to organizations that need this help? So all of that to say, it's like a really well-rounded background that I got just through the course of my career, which is how then falling now into this BISO role was perfect timing. Like I've seen so much of the various, you know, concepts and ideas and so much of it at that high executive level that now being asked to direct security strategy across, you know, a multi-billion dollar division of S&P, it's like, okay, I feel ready for this. I'm ready to dive in and actually make a difference here. And here I sit.
What you build and where it takes you shouldn't be limited by your database. CockroachDB helps developers build and scale apps with fewer obstacles, more freedom, and greater efficiency. So you can forget about the database and trust that it just works. Kubernetes friendly, open source, and indestructible, CockroachDB makes it easier to build and scale apps. It gives companies the freedom to serve customers anywhere, and it's backed by world-class documentation and excellent dedicated support. Discover CockroachDB, the most highly evolved distributed SQL database on the planet. Kubernetes native and built from the ground up to help companies of all sizes, including Bose, Comcast, and Equifax, scale fast, survive anything, and thrive anywhere. Sign up for a free 30-day trial and get a free t-shirt at cockroachlabs.com/popcast. That's cockroachlabs.com/popcast.
It's incredible. And again, it's like you picked up these, you know, these skill sets from each of these pieces that got you prepared for where you're at now as a BISO. Mm-hmm. But I found like one of the things you wrote an article about employers writing better help wanted for InfoSec help wanted ads. And that's why I was like a natural segue to that part. I'm like, well, tell me about that, because I thought that was really cool. Cause I agree. It's like, you know, like don't just come out and say, you know, you're going to come in and you're going to look at apps. It's like, no, it's so much more. And so like, tell me about that. Tell me like, what were your thought processes when you did that?
Yeah. So first and foremost, so I knew I was going to be writing a book, and part of my research was looking into what's causing this. We hear all about the cyber skills gap, right? And, you know, people tell you, oh, there's 4 million open jobs. I saw one that was much reduced. Now they're saying 500,000 open jobs, but whatever the number is, you know, I was hearing that. And then on the flip side, I'm hearing people like college grads and stuff telling me they can't find jobs in security. Well, wait, if we have such a shortage, how is that happening? So one of the things I did was I started looking into job descriptions. And because you hear a lot of rumblings about it, and as you start really researching, you see just how unrealistic our job descriptions are. I mean, you see some of the really bad ones. Like I've got an example of a 3-page job description. I've got another example of an intern job description that calls for like a degree, 3 years of experience, and a certification, which for an intern,
Yeah. Or 15 years of Kubernetes experience when it's only been around for like six.
That was the last I was going to. Yes. You got to have all this experience in a technology that hasn't even existed that long.
Right.
There's a number of those examples. But what it all really comes down to, and this is where I got to with all the research I did, and this was the subject of a TED Talk I did back in March. Our whole model for hiring and security is just completely unsustainable, right? Like we don't really focus on what makes candidates successful. We're trying to find these candidates who have this unicorn mix of all the exact technologies that we use, and they've worked with them all and they know how to configure them all. And we expect everybody who comes into a cybersecurity role to be an instant expert and able to just secure all our stuff. Well, how's that going for us? 20 years, we ain't secure, right? Like I've been in this space for almost 20 years, more than that, if you include my programming time. Like, it doesn't work. Yeah. When it comes down to it, security is about problem solving. And we don't look for problem solvers. We look for people who have technical skills. And you know, we expect everybody we hire to be senior level talent. And of course, coming in at junior level prices besides, which is a whole other ridiculous mess. But if everybody only hires senior level talent, you run out of people. And that's exactly where we're at now. So, one of the things that I've been really focused on with job descriptions is how do you stop focusing on silliness? Like 91% of security job descriptions that call for a CISSP or equivalent. I do the numbers on that, and there's like less than 7% of the entire cybersecurity population that has a CISSP.
I'll take anybody with practical experience over that. Look, everyone get your certs if that's something you want, your degrees or whatever. But like, and I've had this talk in other forums, but it's like, look, if you can get the job, that doesn't matter. If you have, like you said, those innate skills, troubleshooting skills and all that. Again, sorry to cut you off.
No, that's exactly where I'm going with this. So the metaphor that I use, and unfortunately, some folks in the UK kind of messed this up on me because they used it in a very unpopular way. Thank you to the UK government for that. Is my metaphor I use is a barista, right? Let me justify to you why someone who is a barista at a local coffee shop would make a great SOC engineer. Think about what a barista does all day. And think about, throw all the coffee terminology out of it for a minute. And just think about it in terms of what they do, taking all in, make it something that can, transcend any industry, right? They take multiple inputs that come at them very quickly. They process them. They translate those inputs into tasks, and they prioritize those tasks in a way that they can accomplish them efficiently and with quality, right? I mean, they've got to produce the right drink in this case. But so they take all these tasks, they prioritize them in their head, they execute them efficiently, they deliver a result that's accurate. And while they're doing all this, they're also planning and executing maintenance activities, right? I mean, so you put it in those terms and you think about it, okay, I've got someone with all this skill, plus they've got customer service skills, which means they have that empathy for understanding the customer that they're working with. Wrap all that into a package. That's what I want in a SOC engineer. I can teach them how to use my SIM technologies. I can teach them how to search for information in Splunk. I can, I can give them all of that. Those are things I can teach if I'm willing to invest in my people. But it's those inherent skills, those abilities to process all of that and to manipulate that all in your head really quickly and execute on it. That's a unique skill set that not everybody possesses. So of course they got to have the technical acumen to learn, right? I mean, you could have someone who's a barista who just doesn't have that technical acumen. That's not where their headspace is. And that's fine. There's other roles where they might fit, and maybe even other roles within security where they might fit. They're not going to be a SOC engineer most likely, because if you don't have that technical acumen, it doesn't work. But literally, you can take that person. But the key thing that I said there, and this is what we're missing in security, I got to be willing to invest in that person. And that's what we're not doing.
Learn how to operationalize Open Policy Agent at scale with Styra. To get started, go to the link at https://hubs.ly/h0pnkm20.
I'm going to turn that question back on you. Mm-hmm. What are the traits that you look into to invest in somebody? Like you said, it's the barista model, but like, okay, the person, you know, the empathy, I totally agree with that. The empathy. Is there other innate things that you see in somebody that's like, okay, these are the things that make somebody high, you know, are somebody like drop dead, let's hire this person.
Yes. And people are going to like yell at me now, 'cause they're like, Alyssa, you always tell us not to say that. But I do look for a certain level of passion. Okay. Now, that's not something I'm going to put in a job description, and I'm not going to make that, you know, a thing, because honestly, how do I tell somebody who wants to get a job in cybersecurity, you got to show me passion? A bunch of people say that, but what does that mean? So I'm looking for that hunger. Like I mentioned before, I wanted to find somebody who is out there and they're doing, you know, they're doing the thing, like they're learning and they're checking out podcasts. They got a list of podcasts they like to listen to. Or they're doing their own research and then they're publishing videos and things on it. And this is the thing, right? A lot of people say, hey, do your own research or do this self-study, do Hack the Box or try Hack Me or all these different things. Okay, great, but that doesn't translate to a resume, so you never get in the front door. So that's why I stress to people, it's like, okay, take inventory of the things you're doing and actually create content with it. Because in lieu of having experience that everybody says you have to have, if you can show demonstrable content that you've created, all of your own volition, like now you've shown that passion that everybody, so many people talk about, but you've also put something out there that you can demonstrate on a resume. Like you can literally put where you're listing all the companies you work for, put in there content creator, and then talk about everything that you've created. Make that one of the jobs you list.
We're in a time right now. And I'm going to interrupt you, like, but like we're in a time right now. I call it like the full stack DevRel security person, right? It's like what I mean by that is they have to understand the technology. They have to be able to like articulate that in written form, or like we're doing in the various mechanisms that we have from a content perspective, right? And so content creation, you have to be able to edit, you have to be able to publish, you have to be able to get people to, you know, promote. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, think about what you could do to promote yourself internally at a company, right? And so like, if you're already doing that, you know how to sell yourself. And I'm, again, sales, like it's a bad word. No, it's not. You have to be able to have an understanding of what your value, how your value, like what your traits are, like what your skills are to be able to present those externally.
Your skills and your interests.
Yeah.
That's another thing that I'm a real proponent of, is understand what your interests are. I mean, like you said at the beginning and the outset of this, I really like to help people out, right? Like one of the things I really have a passion for is bringing people into this industry and helping them get going and helping them find their path. But one of the things that's really difficult in those scenarios is where I'll have somebody reach out to me and they say, can you help me get into cybersecurity? I say, sure. What part of cybersecurity are you interested in? Well, I want to learn it all. I just want to know cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is huge. Like there's so much. I really need you to, I'm not saying you have to know that this is going to be your career path for the next 20 years, but I do need you to take some self-inventory time and understand what are the aspects of security that interest you the most. And then we can talk about what roles that matches up to. So actually, you know, I alluded to the book I'm writing before. One of the things I'm doing that I have in there is I have exercises for people really to just sit down and actually, how do you inventory yourself? How do you figure out? Because it's not always that easy to just say, yeah, these are the aspects of cybersecurity that I find interesting. So how do you take that self-inventory? Because it's important. If you don't know what interests you, this is such a vast, vast industry at this point with all of the technology and other things we're securing. You mentioned sales before.
Yeah,
sales is a part of cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of friends out there who are doing that and who are amazing people in the cybersecurity industry as a whole. And, you know, so we don't want to forget, it's not just pen testing. Pen testing is not cybersecurity. That's one small facet. If you like investigations, look into, you know, threat intelligence. Yeah. If you like, you know, manipulating people, as hard as that is to say, you know, look into social engineering. Do you have a gift for doing that? You know, there are so many places you can go in this space.
Teleport allows engineers and security professionals to unify access for SSH servers, Kubernetes clusters, web applications, and databases across all environments. You can download Teleport right now at goteleport.com. That's GOTELEPORT.com.
So everyone, look, I'm going to put a link to the line in the liner notes for the Cyber Defenders Career Guide. I'm going to read off these bullets because when I read these bullets, you know, before I did the interview, I'm like, wow, I want to I'm going to pick this book up. I have, you know, I'm just seeing this now. So self-analysis exercises to find your unique capabilities that will make you excel in cybersecurity. Check. Awesome. How to adapt your existing skills to fit a cybersecurity role. Check. Succeed at job services or searches, applications, and interviews to receive valuable offers. Check. Ways to leverage professional networking mentor for success and career growth. Check. Building a personal brand and strategy to stand out from other applicants. Check. And this last one, and again, I read this right before the interview, overcoming imposter syndrome and other personal roadblocks. Here's why I love this, Alyssa, because you go soup to nuts. You're serving this whole thing. Like you're going from all of these aspects and you're looking at not only those like external things to do, like all the things, but the personal things like imposter syndrome. Cause that's, I think honestly, people get so demotivated because they think, oh, you know what? I'm not going to do anything. I shouldn't do this. I'm not going to be able to do it. And they defeat themselves. And that's why I love that last bullet. So talk to me about specific, like maybe some things that people have picking up the book could get from the overcoming imposter syndrome and other personal roadblocks.
Sure. Yeah. So one of the big things right now, I mean, it is a topic that's been there forever. And it follows on to what I was just saying before about like these people who feel like they want to come in and learn everything. So let's accept, first of all, that's completely unrealistic, right? So the idea is, how do you understand, first of all, how do you look at the big names in this industry, like the Leslie Carharts, the Katie Maceras, the Dave Kennedys, the Marcus Careys of the world? How do you
look at Alyssa Millers? Them? I'll give you props.
I'm too humble to do that. Come on.
I'll do it for you.
I'm just out there. But no, seriously, I mean, you look at the big names, whoever they are, take your very popular names that are out there in the industry. People look at them and they assume they know everything about every subject. The reality is they don't. Like, I mean, I can tell you Dave Kennedy and I have had those conversations directly. I mean, Dave's out there doing media interviews every other week on, you know, whatever is in the news this week kind of thing. And so people assume that he knows everything about everything, but he'll be the first one to tell you that, you know, he's got the same blind spots we all do. So first and foremost is just understanding that there's nobody who knows all of this. You could be, you know, I mean, Bruce Schneier has been around forever in this industry, and I guarantee you he would not claim to know everything. So, you know, forget all that, first of all. Find that area that interests you, and that needs to be your focus. The second thing is really just objectively looking at your accomplishments and being willing to attribute them to you, says the one who is just sitting here being too humble to refer to herself as a popular person in InfoSec, but see, it's still there and it happens. And this is something I've learned to do better and better over the last couple of years in particular, is just look back at what you did and be willing to attribute it to yourself. All too often, we look at our accomplishments like, well, I got lucky or I got help or whatever. Well, no duh. Every person who's successful got help, got lucky, made the most of a lucky situation that they fell into. That's the key. Yeah, you got lucky, but you made the most of it. You didn't let it go by. Yeah, you got help and you used it to make yourself better and to succeed. You built off of what somebody else helped you with. You were smart enough to allow them in and to help guide you. That's on you. That's an accomplishment you had. And so just getting that. And so, you know, within the book, it's really exercises about how do you objectively inventory that? How do you get past the, I'm going to minimize this because we're all taught to be humble and, you know, whatever, and be willing to say, yeah, you know what? I kicked butt on that. I really did. You know, you heard me say before, I ran the vulnerability management program for a Fortune 500 company when I was 30 years old. Okay. Up until a year and a half ago, you would have never heard me utter those words. I never looked at it that way. And I always kind of like, well, it just sort of happened. And I didn't really think much about it. But like, I don't care if it just happened or not. That's what I was doing. I was running the entire vulnerability management program for this multi-billion dollar business.
Incredible.
Holy cow, that's pretty damn cool.
Incredible. And I think you should celebrate your accomplishments. I think you're a fantastic person. And, you know, it's, and I'm, you know, I'm definitely a fan. Right. And so that's why having you on the show, it's been fantastic.
Oh, no. You don't get to say fan. You're a friend. And that's something I picked up from a friend of mine too. I don't want fans. I want friends. I'm a human being like everybody else out there. And I appreciate it when people say it, but at the same time, it's really awkward for me to like, I'm your fan. That's a weird thing to say. You know, it feels weird.
Let me correct myself and I'll go edit this back. Okay. I'm your friend. So I want to talk to you a little bit. I want to change gears for a second. And we're going to get into Uncommon Journey podcast. Can you tell everybody about that?
Yeah, so this is a podcast that I started up with two co-hosts, Philip Wiley and Chloe Mastaghi. Unfortunately, because of surgery that I had, we've been kind of in hiatus for a little bit here, and we should be getting back to publishing soon. But the whole goal of the podcast was to really highlight exactly that, the uncommon journeys that we all take, or so many of us take, into security. Sure, a lot of us were a sysadmin or a developer or whatever who got into security. But even then, we've all got kind of a unique story to tell. And, you know, part of the goal that we had for that podcast is to highlight those stories to try to inspire others who are maybe trying to pivot from another career path into this, or who maybe, you know, are recent college grads, but they graduated with an English degree. How could they be productive in cybersecurity? So we want to highlight that and inspire these people, because I said before, cybersecurity is all about problem solving. Well, our problem solving is strongest when we have those diverse mindsets. Not everybody is a technologist who came up through programming or sysadmin or network admin ranks, right? Like, imagine the perspectives that you can get from somebody who, you know, went to nursing school, or somebody who worked as an architect for a number of years, or who worked in retail. Like, these are all people I've actually worked with, right? Who went through these different routes to get here. And they all come with a very unique and different perspective. So it's so crucial to me that we draw those people in when they have the interest. Like, let's get them here, because they're just going to make us stronger.
Fantastic. And again, y'all, I will have a link in the liner notes of the episode to Uncommon Journey podcast. Like and subscribe. Boom. All right. So I want to move over to Twitter questions, because we got a bunch. Okay. And, so we have one first from Eric Ducardi, and he says, favorite and least favorite programming language.
Okay. Favorite is easy, Python, just because it's kind of like multi-purpose, right? I mean, you can do just about anything with Python. Plus, there's so many security tools that you can easily extend with Python over really any of the others. Boy, least favorite. That's a tough one, because no matter what I say, someone is going to yell at me. Here we go. I'll throw it back. Fortran. Oh my God. I am so glad that I never had to do it professionally. The amount of time I spent in it, it was horrible. I don't know how y'all do it. Thank God for you. Y'all are great. I love you to death. And I'm so glad that you love your programming language. I hated it because I was awful with it. So don't hate me. I didn't like it.
The next question is, hardware or software at the forefront of security?
Neither. I know this is a fence riding response, but it's both. Like, honestly, if we want to get better at security, we can't just rely on the hardware. We can't just rely on the software. We've seen examples of that, right? Like, how many times has Intel built things into their chips to create better security and the software side of it fell down? right? And so we still had problems, or vice versa. You know, the same company, they put security stuff into their chips, the software relies on it, and there's a bug in, you know, these technologies that they're implementing. I don't think we can rely wholly on one or the other. They have to work together, because either one can undo the other.
I think it's like the sandwich. And I was talking about this with Ava Black. Do you know Ava?
Yeah.
Yeah. And she said, you know, the Confidential Computing Consortium, you know, the three C's and whatever. We always started talking about it. To me, it's like that sandwich. You're building this perfect sandwich. You got the bread, right? You got the hardware. And on top, you've got, you know, like your OSs and on top of that, the applications and, you know, all those things. If you build that, and you need security at all of those levels, right? If you've got, you know, and I think hardware gets like, you know, because of all those things you mentioned, it's really hard to kind of like tap into those functions and have that the thought process. But I believe it's all of those things. It's that whole life cycle. And, you know, so yeah, it's like, and then you hear like DevSecOps and all those fun things. And you're just like, wait a second. It's like hardware should be there. And I think the hardware vendors are, you know, opening up to that. They're thinking about this more and more, but like then shout out to Ava and then the group over there doing some really cool stuff as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So, okay. Next up, what is your stance on ransomware payments?
Oh, good. Two friends writing questions in a row. Because here again, you know, I would love to sit here and say, don't pay them, right? I mean, I think, you know, not paying ransoms is definitely helpful to demotivate attackers. If they're launching these ransomware attacks and they're not getting paid, you know, it comes to reason they're going to find a different way to try to make money. You know, but not being breachable is also a nice demotivator, or making it at least really, really hard, is also a demotivator, because if it takes me so much effort to successfully ransomware an organization, well, you know, sooner or later, it's not worth my time and effort. But the reality of both of these is, okay, we're not going to be perfect with either. And once you've been breached, there's a whole lot more nuance there than I'm going to sit down and, you know, say, just, you know, categorically don't pay, because there's a lot of things to be considered here. So let's say I'm a healthcare organization who's been ransomwared, and I have, you know, smart ransomers who are realize that just asking for money isn't enough. I have to threaten that I'm going to release all the data I have. And oh yeah, by the way, that data includes all of the health records for the 5 million patients in my clinic. Well, don't I as an organization kind of owe it to those patients to do everything in my power to make sure that their healthcare information doesn't end up in the public space? And if I'm being blackmailed with that, you know, yeah, I need to do what I need to do to protect that. So, you know, I've seen some of my peers suggest like, well, we should put all these ransomware, known ransomware organizations on the OFAC list, so it's illegal for companies to pay them. Well, that's great, except, you know, what if this, think about the pipeline issue. What if that had been more impactful across the entire country? And what if it had been their operational environment that had been impacted, not just a billing system? What would you say then? Do you say don't pay the ransom and spend 3 weeks trying to recover while meanwhile the entire country shut down without fuel? No, you're not going to say that. Look what happened in Texas when, you know, we needed heat down there in the middle of winter, right? I mean, so say that happens and now we've got, you know, we can't get heating fuel in the dead of winter to people living up here in my frozen neck of the woods. I mean, that's, you know, there's, so it's far more nuanced than to just be able to say, no, don't pay. You really have to consider the situation.
Fantastic. Fantastic. This is the last Twitter question we have. And that is, what is the best wood for smoking a brisket?
I saw that from Sam. That's great. Cause Sam knows I'm an avid, pit master barbecue, whatever you want to call it. In fact, I just have a new smoker coming soon. But so for brisket, if I'm going to smoke a brisket, I am actually mixing probably a fruit wood, usually cherry, maybe apple wood with a nut wood, most likely oak or something like that. You know, I like the stronger flavor that the oak gives you because you're talking beef here, but at the same time, I like to add in a little bit of the sweetness of a fruit would as well. And Cherry's kind of like my go-to anyway. It's like, I can use Cherry on beef. I can use it on pork. I can use it on fish. So yeah, there you go. If you have to pick one, it would definitely be Cherry, but I usually try to mix the Cherry with like an oak or something like that.
So y'all sit tight for Alyssa Miller's cookbook that's coming out in 2022.
Oh, no, I've got a GitHub repo with all my recipes in it.
Okay, let's talk after this. Let's see how we can both make some money out of this. All right. Sales, baby. Sales. All right. So my last question for you is, what work are you most proud of?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I don't know if I would call it work, but I mean, the work that I'm doing to support and bring people in, what I'm most proud of are those wins. When I have somebody comes excited, someone I've been working with and mentoring in some way, they come back excited to me and say, "Oh my God, I got this job and I'm so thrilled." That to me is so awesome. Like, I love watching those stories happen. I'll throw her name out there. Inverted Geek is one recently. I met her 2 years ago at B-Side Chicago, not even 2 years ago yet. And, you know, cybersecurity student, not working in the industry, just, you know, looking to, you know, kind of learn something about cybersecurity at this conference. And she came to my talk on threat modeling and we got to talking after the fact. Well, you know, I think end of last year, very early this year, I guess it was end of last year, she landed her first cybersecurity job. She hasn't even finished her degree program yet, and she landed her first cybersecurity job. So she's already crazy excited about that. And just, you know, just this past month, she tells us how she got promoted already. She's like 6 months into her job. And again, as she should be, super excited. So to me, that's, if I'm proud of anything, it's I'm proud of those people and I love watching their careers flourish. And yeah, it's great to know that I played, you know, some role in that, large or small, whatever it was, just knowing that I got to be there and be a part of that. I think if I'm proud of anything I've done, that's it.
Fantastic. Alyssa, this has been a treat. It's been, I'm so happy that you came on the podcast and thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.